Everyone's asleep. Everyone but me. And I can't help feel like I'm doing this all by myself.
Broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, and you can also listen in live at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, the chat room, and there's a number of other really nice, fabulous, generous networks around there that are actually doing something. In fact, somebody sent me his website, and he's got a stack of like the top radio shows in the world kind of thing to listen to, and I'm like number two on his list, and there's an actual playlist, so if you press the play button on it, it comes up with like, I don't know, the last 30 odd shows of the Vinnie Eastwood show. They could just kind of play on through. Amazing. I don't even know how to do that, and somebody did it. It's pretty cool, at least I thought so anyway. Okay, well, today we were supposed to be having our guest, Penny Bright, talking about John Key and his never-ending scumbaggery. But the question on everybody's minds nowadays is there actually a peaceful resolution here, or are we just treating these scumbags too nicely? We're always trying to do things in a proper channels and work within the system and what have you, but the system is owned by people who have no rules that they follow. Isn't that interesting? I find it personally disturbing that people actually still trust any form of political party in anything that they say, and quite literally anything that they say could just sit around and go, you know what, there's something very frightening going on. Something very frightening indeed in the halls of Parliament. Oh yes, dark forces at work. I think that the country itself, whichever country we talk about, of course, has a problem with its people, right? People have not identified with their country a little bit. Or maybe there's just an increase of distractions. For one reason or another, they don't really care what happens to their country. I find that extraordinary, because It's like not caring about what happens to the house that you live in. You know, everything that happens inside it affects you in some way, shape, or form. So it's a strange disconnect where people have invested very little thought in what they vote for or who it is that is governing them. If you have a look at any of these people who are big mayors or what have you, it's quite apparent that each and every single one of these people is on the take. Every single one. Not one little boy excluded. Every single time you see it, it's beyond a joke how obvious it can be. For instance, Federal Reserve Bank responsible for devaluing the US currency, basically controlling the United States through its power over the money supply. The New Zealand Reserve Bank just gets in a new governor. You know, the equivalent of Bernanke or whatever. And who's his previous employer? Oh, that's right. The World Bank. Am I the only one who sees a connection here between World Bank piracy and our country becoming indebted inextricably with gargantuan dollar values? There is something very wrong. Nobody should ever have to put up with that much debt. Oh my goodness. You can't move with that much debt. It's like a rock chained around your ankle, like in those old school like 1930s prison movies or something. Beyond a joke. Here's the real crux of the issue, though. Do you want to change the system or do you want to create something new? Something that ain't been around before. Do you want to, instead of on an election, instead of you wanting people to vote for you, you're wanting people to do something else for you? Don't vote, but turn up at other people's political rallies and talk to them, just person to person, and try and ask them, what's really of value to you? Do you value your freedom? Yep. Do you value your health? Yeah. Do you value having a future for the for your forebears? Yeah. Okay. The people who you are voting for right now, don't. It's just that simple. They don't care about you. Stop voting for them. Because they're going to manipulate you. They're going to destroy you. And they have a clear track record of doing this to other people. So if you don't believe me, it's a manifestation of your own stupidity. You can fix ignorance, but you can't fix stupidity. If somebody's really just too dull to see, yeah, it's just not worth the time, a lot of people would say. We do have, on the other hand, in the general truth movement, a whole range of things that we can do about all of these problems. Just talking about them by themselves seems to be good enough. Like counselling, for instance, the best way to get over those past traumas and whatnot is to talk about them, isn't it? There's that whole range of discourse in the media that has been censored. The criminal behaviour of people in positions of power. It's suddenly kind of taboo, and anybody who gets taken down is real small fry, and the bigger guys that they were connected with get away scot-free. Happens every single time you look at it, man. They'll take some Bernie Madoff off, you know, or whatever. Some little sacrificial goat for the spit. But other than that, Crime Central still maintains its grip on power, and all the rest of us suffer greatly for it. It's not rocket science. If you've still got criminals running you tomorrow, that are running here today, then tomorrow ain't going to be any better. It's not going to be any better, assuredly. There is a consequence for ignorance. If you don't correct it, if you don't learn what you're ignorant of, then you're stupid. However, you're stupid straight off, you ain't going to learn nothing. And you're a danger to everybody else, essentially. But then again, we all have moments of stupidity, don't we? And it's important to have a little bit of humility and not be elitist and think of everybody else like down in the dumps, like, oh, you're slave scum, you know, you're sheep. You still think that aspartame's good for you and fluoride's great for your teeth, blah, blah, blah. You know, look, the fact that you've got more information than other people like that, take those cliche movie spiritual masters, right, who have all the knowledge in the world or whatever. They don't actually try and loud it over you, per se. They try to ask you questions and allow you to come to realizations on your own, on the whole. And, well, don't know on the whole, but you know what I mean. And the whole concept of having and sharing things, information, community, etc., those are the fabrics that actually really bind all of us at a very strong level. And they're being destroyed systematically by putting us into little factions. Why are you voting Democrat? Why are you voting Republican? Why are you voting? Not saying don't vote. I'm just asking you the question. Why are you voting? I want to know how people can justify doing nothing all day. Apparently, there's people out there who accept government benefits and sit on their ass all day, smoking joints and what have you, and doing absolutely nothing. I'm concerned about this type of idea that you can literally live off the fat of the land, off the hard work of other people and pocket all the money. But then again, think about this. Imagine the people who are doing lots and lots of work every day and have absolutely no rights to the amount of wealth that they manage to steal off of everybody else. Those people don't get a proportional amount of the attention, in my opinion, because the person who's sitting around doing nothing isn't actually harming anybody. They're not financing black ops. They're not running heroin in and out of Afghanistan in U.S. Fire Service C-130 Hercules. Are they? Nah. So why is it that these people, who are the lazy ones, and etc., the dull budgets, blah, 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 all the, those people, they get demonized so badly, yet they're responsible for very little in terms of society's problems? I mean, look at it this way. There's a downturn in the economy because a huge group of Wall Street bankster elite scumbags paid off some freaking finance marking companies who rate stuff as AAA or BBB or whatever the heck to sell bad mortgages. They literally had girls in bikinis going, come down and get a mortgage. Yeah. Well, you know, come on. It takes 5 minutes to get $500,000 in debt. No ability to pay it back. No license, no history, no identity, no passport, no nothing. Just come on down and you can have your home. Finally, and so all those desperate people with no idea whatsoever that the little payments that they were going to make Excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, we have a guest calling into the show. Hello, is that Penny? No. Sorry, mate, we're on the air at the moment. Hello, say hello to the audience.
Sorry, are you on the air?
Yes, we are.
Okay, that's really a surprise. Okay. Sorry, what are you talking about?
Well, we were talking about how the bankster elite kind of took out the economy by selling everybody false loans and things of that nature and creating a huge amount of debt bubble, and how everybody just, instead of blaming the banksters for the downturn in the economy, they blame the unemployed people who collect a benefit and smoke weed all day.
Yeah, and telling them lies. Like Greece, they're saying that Greece, that people don't want to pay taxes and similar nonsense.
Exactly.
I mean, there are difficulties explaining people what's really happening. They still believe those lies from the mainstream media that that simply Greece, the people are lazy and they're just went into debt because they don't agree and all that nonsense.
Yeah.
But the reality is somebody else was greedy, and these were banksters, and they caused all these troubles.
You know, it's just that simple, isn't it? It's not all the general, regular people that are the problem. It's the criminal bankster elite, and it always has been.
Yeah, it's like a catch the thief, you know. They cause the problem, and then they blame everybody around themselves, the public, that they are the cause of the problem, while the opposite is true. It's like the catch the thief, that thing, you know.
Exactly. And it is pretty cheap to buy off political parties these days with a few $100,000 of donations. So I want to thank you very much, mate, for your call. What was your name, by the way?
My name is Mario.
Mario. All right, Mario. Thank you very much for your call and for your information. We're on 5 days a week, 10 a.m. through midday, local New Zealand time. So that's Tuesday through Saturday if you're in New Zealand.
I was actually going to ask you something else.
Oh, well, unfortunately, we don't have time, so we'll have to give you a ring back. You can call the line in, 218-339-8525, 218-339-8525. That's a US area code. We'll be right back, folks, at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com.
My living soul don't care about the color of your face. Unite and roll, respect our right to live here on the land. It's Tino Ranga, Tino Tonga, we don't own the banks. The parliament does so where do you rather stand? They paying their bills off your back with hefty tax demands. Misleading our youth with alcohol, TV, contrabands. So kids act up and disturb our community. Uninformed public then consents to a planned absurdity. What? Replace our human rights with commercial slavery. They print $100 and loan it to you.
Welcome.
They charge interest on the loan, but don't print the interest.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the show that's all about printing counterfeit bills and then charging interest on it after we loan it to you. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. And incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. You can join us in the chat room there at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com/chat-room.html. Also, we can accept callers now, so the number is 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. Kind of also have the ability to accept Skype calls as well. So if you're listening in and you've got my Skype thing and you want to talk on air or something of that nature, yep, just flick us a message, mate. We'll get you connected at some point. The other thing is, what were we talking about before we came off? Oh, yeah. The old problem reaction solution bit with the banking crisis. Dig this. You waltz in there, you create a massive bubble of debt by selling mortgages, basically literally flogging mortgages off to anybody that'd be stupid enough to sign on the dotted line. And then when the banks can't pay it off or anything like that, you wind up repossessing their homes. So as a direct result of all this private property changing hands and all this fake money getting into the massive debt coffers, you've eliminated a huge chunk of private property because now it all kind of belongs into the banks and the government and all of these other bailouts, etc. What the heck is going on? You've got whole, like, ghost neighborhoods now and decent, you know, new suburbs that were being built and now they're just basically abandoned. You know, like the plastic cling wrap is still on the bathroom sink. You have people squatting in them, stuff like that. Tent cities outside of Vegas, I hear. Come on. These banks, the scum, have created a massive, massive problem. And now they come in and say, oh, we're the ones who, well, they don't even admit that they're the ones who caused the freaking problem. People like John Key or whatever. Barack Obama hires nothing but people from Wall Street to come in his cabinet because those are the only people that are willing to support this kind of agenda to impoverish the common man, to destroy the middle class so that there is only an elite and an under-slave class. That's all they want. They want a completely top-down society. The ruling elite. And all the slaves come, right? It's like you'll have a little chip or something, ruling elite, slaves come. Beep, 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 beep. Ah, slaves come. You can't come through this tunnel. Why, man? It's way quicker to get to the other side through this tunnel. I know. But you're slaves come. And slaves come have to be inconvenienced for no apparent reason. Oh, man, it sucks. Yep, it does suck to be slaves come. Move along, slaves come. You know. I have a very dark vision of the future, man. A dark, dark vision. But it's also really funny and horrific, you know, kind of like Judge Dredd. Everybody else is being taken out really horrifically. Isn't that? And if they ain't taking you out, you know, physically, then they're most certainly going to take you out economically. And that's what all these trade deals are about. There's a protest today about the cuts in the budget to education, right? Well, dig this. Education is something that I'm not 100% sure we should entrust to the government to give us because many people don't know where public education kind of came from and what it sort of produces out of our kids. That's the interesting thing. People will support something they don't know what it is. They will turn up to a protest to protest against its funding being cut, and they don't know what's being cut. They're just turning up in general, feeling like they're going to change something. Protests in general, unless they are unprecedented in size, and even then, basically accomplish very little. There's a whole lot of information and stuff that takes place, a whole lot of talking and things of that nature and a real feel-good atmosphere. But in terms of legislative change that is the direct result of individual protests like, Prime Minister, a bunch of people peacefully walked up a street. Really? Dear God, man. Maybe we better change all this draconian legislation. And stuff that's going to basically cut the entire heart of the country out. Holy cow! People peacefully walked up the street! Oh, my God! Oh, God! It's over! It's over! I mean, come on. I mean, on many, many protests, not a single one of them has been successful because once the government... Well, basically, they've got one agenda and one agenda only, and it's provided for them by evil banks, the slimy scumbags, who basically supersede every government. no matter what government changes, the bureaucrats that run the government and the scumbags that finance the political parties remain the same. So nothing changes. Just a different face. No wonder everything keeps getting progressively worse, election after election. No wonder at the end of the day when they've given you two candidates to vote for, it's a choice between utter failure and utter failure. You know, what is going on? The people are so apathetic at this point. And who could blame them? People just no longer care because they see that there is no longer a difference. Could we make a difference, or enough of a difference at least, to shock them out of their apathy, to make them want to go into the streets and start advocating for something other than being a slave and indulging in obscene quantities of scumbaggery? I don't think so. There's a deadly, deadly, deadly plot that is raging across this world, like the bile duct of a freaking supermodel. Raging, especially after meals. And it is, there are some dangerous kind of implications of simply not knowing who you're voting for. Huge. Imagine if everybody in Zimbabwe before Mugabe got elected knew that he was a scumbag. Imagine if everybody knew that about Hitler. Imagine if everybody knew that about Bush. Well, I've got something for you. Imagine if you knew that every single person that's being put in front of you to vote for that's actually got a likelihood of winning is beholden to the bankers. What if I told you that? Who would you vote for then? Would you vote for a minor party that's just not going to win? Just for the moral support of it? You win the small battles. You know how it's funny, you got somebody who's got like 1-2% of the national gross who would support them, Libertarian Party or Green Party or whatever. And they go out and they campaign to be president, knowing full well that they're going to lose, instead of focusing on local, small elections where they will have more of a cumulative effect. You know? Ants don't take out cows or stuff like that, bro. They take out, like, insects that are 10 times their size or something like that. Not 10,000 times their size. There's something going on here, bro. And people have gotten so foolish. It's like there's this old way of doing things of submitting to the government. Here's the thing. You got a health select committee that wants to vaccinate everybody, right? And you think, man, these people are scumbags. They work for the freaking pharmaceutical industry. They want to force vaccinate people. This is hell on earth. And of course, when you go in and tell them about this and you accuse them of being corrupt, you're not allowed to, right? They're allowed to pass legislation that basically takes away people's right to health, which is probably one of the most basic rights you got, but we're not allowed to call them corrupt for being corrupt. This double standard exists only because the person on the other end of that bench ain't got a leg to stand on. That's why you need a double standard, and that's what you stand on, I think. These people have no concern. They've got dead eyes. Wearing suits for too long has made their shoulders slump with the posture of a crooked cane hanging off of a Christmas tree with the red and white stripes and whatnot. And they sit there, these dull expressions on their face, not even listening to the people who are giving them submissions. Not even listening. The people who are giving submissions are putting out documents and these packages of stuff for read. They're not going to read them. And even if they do read them, they're not going to take them into account. The whole lines of officialdom, the whole way that people interact with their government servants and things of that nature has become, unless it has always been this way, very, very fracked up, to put it bluntly. It's fracked up that I can't, you know, go and talk to my prime minister and say, hey, bro, Mr. Key, can you just stop selling out the country, man? I know you're a bankster scumbag, and I know that you're being paid by Merrill Lynch and all of these other bastards overseas, but for frack's sake, stop destroying this country. There's plenty of other countries that you could go to and sell derivatives to and destroy and sell out to the World Bank and things of that nature. Just stop doing it here. All right. You know, it'd be lovely if I could do that and he'd actually listen. But it just does not work that way. It doesn't even matter how good a reputation they got. If you got a tough question, you get shunned. That's what happens. If people know that you're not going to be asking them an easy question, then they are going to basically twaddle off and not want to talk to you. That's why a whole bunch of media shills and things of that nature don't properly criticize or call out, in many cases, the people that they're interviewing, because it creates a friction in the relationship and they may never get to interview them again. This could be a real powerful person that you can latch onto and say, oh, yes, I've interviewed this person. Yes, yes, yes. But do they actually really want to come back is the thing. If you got an opportunity to say what you think in front of somebody, I'd say take it. What have you got to lose? There certainly can't be an awful lot. Why would you think about doing nothing when you could simply act? Acting is very quick. Thinking can sometimes take a long, long time. And what's interesting is that people have gotten confused when they see legislation like asset sales or privatization or draconian legislation to force you into things or to surveil you while you sleep or any stuff like that. They think these people are making a mistake, that there wasn't enough thought went into it. In actual fact, there's been an awful lot of thought that's gone into it, which is why you think it's a mistake, because it was made to look like one. You were made to think like that. And it wasn't that difficult. All you had to do was just control the television set. And all these people waltzing around, reporting outside live from Parliament on the stories of the day that I've been told from some teleprompter reading frack. Yes, there is deep down trouble in New Zealand, and we need to make sure that we get into exorbitant amounts of debt in order so that we stay out of the hole. Hold on a second. Did he just say that? Yeah, see, this is the thing. They're reading the teleprompter and they're not in. They don't know what they're reading. They have no idea. Okay, the news reporters are idiots. It's a shame, but it's true. And so it's not very, shall we say, surprising when the people who listen to these idiots know bugger all about what really goes on at any time. Well, in either case, don't hate on them. Could be worse. That could have been you one day. Listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Call our number is 218-339-8525. 218-339-8525 is the number to call in. Be right back in just a few minutes. Don't go away, folks.
Alone, against your mad, deadly, worldwide, conspiratorial, gangster, computer god communism with wall-to-wall, deadly gangster protection, lifelong sworn conspirators, murder incorporated organized crime, the police and judges, the deadly sneak parroting puppet gangsters using all the gangster deadly Frankenstein control, these hangman rope sneak deadly gangsters, the judges and the police trick, trap, rob, wreck, butcher, and murder the people to keep them terrorized in gangster Frankenstein earphone radio slavery for the communist gangster government and con artist parroting puppet gangster playboy scum on top. There is no escape from this worse gangster police state using all of the deadly gangster Frankenstein controls.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Call in lines are open, 218-339-8525, 218-339-8525. If you're going to call in from overseas, I think it's 001-218-339-8525, I think. You can use those little call-in cards from New Zealand and stuff. A few listeners have done that. But anyway, there's this blockading the budget thing that's going down. And you know what's scary about this whole idea about having a budget is that there's a limit to what you got, okay, and you're planning. Now, there's good things to planning, right? For example, in military stratagem, if you have no planning, you're screwed in general. The person who plans the most wins. But when it comes to life, as Max Egan said on the show yesterday, is that if you've got a plan, then your plan makes you deviate from any possible synchronicities or chance encounters and things that you might have had you not had that plan. So you're essentially giving up, in a large way, the ability to kind of wander around and be free. And I find that to be quite poignant, especially when you're talking about the budget. Because, you know, when the budget comes out and they stand on the podium and they go, oh, blah, 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 it's hard economic times, we've got to cut education, we've got to cut this and that and the other. Are you going to cut the military budget? No, we're going to increase the budget on that. Oh, okay. Yeah. Come on. It's excruciating. It's like you're sitting back and wondering, is everybody else going along with this guy? Do they actually think that what he's saying is true? Or are they like me, where every sentence is recognized as a big, heinous lie, and it makes you feel sick to your stomach of the hypocrisy of it, and then almost laugh out loud because it's so horrendous? That's what almost every single political speech from a presidential or prime ministerial candidate is, isn't it? A speech from a paid, lying, sociopathic freaking scumbag who has absolutely been endowed with the skills of convincing you of anything he wants and enchanting you with his schemes and scumbaggery. Have you noticed they're always very charming in some way, shape, or form? You know, Clinton was charming, and Bush was kind of cute in a way, you know, it's like a teddy bear that'll invade my country. Oh, really? I've got this idea in my head of a world where the leaders are actually accountable and very caring people who have something, well, a lot invested and what goes on in terms of their daily life. Like, they're not just rubbing shoulders with the deal makers and things of that nature. They're actually in the communities themselves and mucking in, as we say. Getting your pick and your shovel out, helping your neighbor dig a ditch or something. That's the kind of people that should actually be running the show, is the ones who actually know what it's like for everyone. When you're ruling everybody at 30,000 feet, everybody looks like ants. And you start to lose touch. And that's what happens with a lot of these people who go into politics. They either go in there with these great ideals of changing the country, sending us off in a better direction to a brighter future, only to realize that the people they were following, the people who they pledged their allegiance to, were all on the take, getting paid way more for doing way less than you, and didn't deliver on anything that they promised, and instead made you work really, really, really hard for nothing. Nothing at all. Maybe a few scraps of something that you wanted to happen will be incorporated onto a whole huge open slather of crap that you don't want. That's politics. That's called compromise. There needs to be a, shall we say, an ending of compromise within politics to a degree, because there's so many times when we're all having these arguments, etc., but the truth's not coming out about what these arguments are really about, okay? It's not about the trade deals being signed and sending all our jobs overseas. It's not about the finance companies and major corporate banks owning the issuance of our currency. It's not about the huge quantities of toxins that are being deliberately put into our food and water supplies. It's not about anything real. It's always some kind of fluttering issue that virtually has no significance whatsoever. I could think it would be quite interesting to see what would happen if perhaps John Key, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, were to come out and say that there is a ruthless criminal bankster elite who are attempting to destroy New Zealand, and I work for them, but I don't want to work for them anymore, and I want to instead get New Zealand out of debt, close down the New Zealand Reserve Bank, because they're the ones who are really in control here. Would everybody just call him a conspiracy theorist? I mean, he's the Prime Minister. Everybody would just call him a conspiracy theorist, wouldn't they? Well, it'd be interesting to see. We have a caller in, Tim in Wisconsin. Tim, welcome, man.
Hey, I don't remember hearing if you ever had a woman named Dr. Kelly on your show or not. Dr. Kelly, I don't remember what her last name is, again, but she's what I was thinking about what you were saying before about the ways that they're, you know, killing us with big pharma and stuff. Dr. Kelly's
hold on a second. Can you just hold your mouthpiece a little bit further away from your mouth there? It's kind of overdriving a little bit.
My phone is in the phone speaker mode. I got to take it off quick.
Yeah, take it off speakerphone.
There, it should be off now.
Oh, that's much better.
Yeah, I always do that while had on speakerphone just while holding, you know, because of the, you know, hearing about the thing of it being bad, you know, on cell phones, you know, the radiation, you know. Anyway, Dr. Carly on the Republic Broadcasting Network, she's also one who's really good for, you know, telling about ways that Big Pharma is killing us, and also about them spraying rabies virus, you know, and combining it with the flu virus, and that being responsible for that zombie, you know, cannibal zombie, you know, thing. And it'd be good if I wouldn't have been too, you know, a bit too busy to, you know, even like, you know, take notes while I was listening to her, a program of hers this morning when she was sitting in for Maggie Rodden on Unsolicited Opinion. Cause it'd be good to be able to remember more to tell on this show about. But that's a bit of things right there.
All right.
She'd be a good one to have on your show.
Okay. Well, I'd like it if you could email me her website there, man, or her email contact address, and also anybody else who wants me to interview somebody. It's as simple as that. You send me somebody's email address, and they're basically as good as on the show. It's that simple. Thank you, Tim, for your call, man. And we'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. You can also join us in the chat room or call in to 218-339-8525. That's 218-339-8525. We'll be right back. Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and incidentally the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. You can also join us in the chat room there, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com/chat-room.html, and the call in number is 218-339-8525. Just to get that down one more time. And DVDs. Have you noticed that when you give a DVD to somebody or you watch a DVD, it has an immense amount of effect on you, more than usually just having a conversation with somebody about some description of conspiracy theory? Because documentaries, they lay stuff out in a way that is well-polished and gives people the idea and big picture a lot better. Does it not? The DVD is an information weapon, man. Way back in the day when they had leaflets and flyers and stuff like that done with old printing presses. My goodness, that was the height of technology. It was amazing how much information they could spread and how many times people would read these little pieces of paper as they'd pass it to other people as they were going by. And an entire revolution started to spring up. DVDs, mate. Next level. Next generation. Let's talk about the 9/11 conspiracy. There are so many great documentaries on that. That'll just blow your mind. Now, regardless of whether, and there's a lot of arguments and conjecture about what really happened on 9/11, and my short answer is I don't know because I haven't done the proper research. But I've interviewed a lot of researchers, and they've all got conflicting views, so it makes me even more confused. But some of them also call each other names and stuff like that, so I don't want to get involved. But the other thing is when people get exposed to the conspiracy about 9/11, they have a huge shockwave kind of go through them, like, oh, my God, 9/11 was an inside job. And it's really scary. It's shocking. It's terrible. And yet you got people who've known 9/11 was an inside job was for years, and they're now perfectly comfortable, and they're dealing with it and what have you, and they're going out and they're handing out DVDs, right? Now, here's the thing. When you find out 9/11 was an inside job, and, of course, I'm using repetition here on purpose, when you find out 9/11 was an inside job, you change. Something about you changes. And you have the responsibility to do something about it. And often, you'll be the one lone voice of reason amidst a whole group of different people. Why are you so dastardly and so horrible as to be the one who gets discriminated against for thinking 9/11's an inside job? You know, and that's the interesting thing about anybody who's talking about 9/11 these days. They all say it's an inside job, but they argue with each other about how it was done. Stupid. For frack's sake. Come together on the point that you agree on. It's an inside job. Okay, what's next? Okay, well, we've got to bring the people responsible to justice. Really? Do you? Do you actually need to bring somebody to justice in order to restore justice? Do individuals need to be figured out, or does a global ring and a global revolution need to take place before any of those wrongs can be righted? Because just remember, even if you got every single person who directly firsthand participated in 9/11, even if you did get all of those people who were working for CIA as cover operatives or blah, 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 or whatever, name your plausible deniability spectrograph microscope right here. If all of those people did go to jail, what would change? Nothing, because they're all expendable. The world would know that 9/11 was an inside job, but what would that actually change? See, the whole idea of exposing it as one is to expose the fact that your government is quite likely to attack itself in order to allow its criminal agenda to get through. Once you've exposed that particular tool that they use, they can't really use it anymore. And that's another thing why I think this Olympics is going to go off without a hitch, and there ain't going to be no terrorist attacks or any stuff like that. Because there's been too much attention all over the internet for everybody saying, oh, it's going to be a false flag or anything like that, for them to possibly do it and get away with it for more than a few hours. It'll be exposed instantly by the truth media. The truth will be out there quicker than you can say Fat Sam. Scumbaggery basically has a limited number of moves. It's kind of like chess. They can only go in certain directions. They don't have any frickin' rules, though. That's what people have got to realize as well. These people don't play by any rules. They really don't. They are freaking ruthless. They will kill people for no good reason. And they'll laugh about it. they almost love doing this stuff. In fact, they do love hurting people, destroying human life, killing societies. You know, imagine the mindset of somebody who thinks like that. They should feel freaking cold. Oh, my God. You know, imagine a friend of yours or something like that just killed a really cute little bunny rabbit in front of you in a really horrific manner and then was smiling about it. And you saw this kind of really scary look in their eyes and you're like, whoa, that's really scary, man. These people, and I haven't seen that side of him before. And just picture this. It's your politician. It's your local representative on the city council. Those are the little vicious bunny killing mofos that you've got to be really concerned about, because they are freaking dangerous. Because everybody trusts them. That's what makes them so freaking dangerous. If you want to get away with a big freaking scam, right, you want to basically massacre an economy, people cannot suspect it. Otherwise, they will take steps to get themselves out of it. Just like an ambush. If the ambush is suspected, then it's less likely to be successful. And the same is true with all of these political games, money hustlers, etc. They're just playing a freaking game to which there are no freaking rules. No rules except to keep growing, keep expanding their influence, and keep being on top, more or less. Somebody who's wanting to prolong their domination of all life on Earth for as long as humanly possible, to the point where they want to obtain godlike powers and get like implants and stuff like that that'll perform their bodily functions so that they can live forever in some kind of a post-human apocalyptic state, traveling through the stars, you know, meeting distant scumbaggery, kind of like in Prometheus, this new movie that's come out. This whole bunch of people wanted to go and see the origins of mankind and wind up getting killed in the freaking process because they're just that freaking stupid. They didn't suspect that something was up. Yeah, that is an allegory for the entire human race at this point. We're about to get screwed up, mutilated, and utterly destroyed for all time. All because we didn't think for a moment, you know what? Maybe there isn't just a huge quantity of benevolence about all of this. Maybe there's something a bit more sinister afoot. Maybe there's some form of danger when you go into the polling booth. Is there really? Because I think if the polling booths could actually change things, that'd make voting illegal. Are you a voter? Right, okay. So, are you an elector? No, I'm not an elector. Well, hold on. They have electorates, and voters vote on these people to represent these electorates, right? Right. But you're not an elector. No. So how can you actually elect anybody? Well, I guess I can't. Right. That's why they've had control over you for so freaking long. It's because they tell you that voting matters. They tell you all these beautiful lies and schemes and disastrous conflicts of interest and logical fallacies that for some reason, just because this person's got some kind of a business acumen background, that we take him seriously and we think that he knows what he's talking about because he's at the head of a political party. No, sorry, just another financed scumbag here to destroy you. and all of your country, just like Justin Bieber. Yeah. You have a lot of bankers who always wind up running for the top job. You ever notice that? They always seem to come from the finance world. Why is that? Is it because financiers control the world and ergo it's better to have a financier at the helm? I think it must be something about close to that. Don't you think? The amount of things that get cut are quite extraordinary. The amount of legislation that gets passed, even more so. For example, we've been talking about Barack Obama and George Bush and John Key and all these clowns and what have you, and they're literally passing something like rafts of legislation, like hundreds and hundreds of these new bills every day. Have you ever read a single one of them? I haven't. What the heck is going on here? Like, does anybody know what the law is? Right? Nobody does. Because in order to know what the law is, you'd have to memorize, in my opinion, every freaking law that's ever been passed. Which means that you'd spend maybe 70 or 80 years, if you're a speed reader, of course, who can, you know, devour a book in a second. You'd spend like, I don't know, maybe 100,000 years or something like that going through all these old tax laws and goodness knows what the frack else. It's getting to the point now where you can barely even walk up your own path and start your car without breaking some kind of law now. It's extraordinary. Like, we've gotten tapped into this big freaking web. There's so much stuff that's illegal. What? At what point are they going to start legalizing things that aren't dangerous? Like, they're only there to make more things illegal. It's what happens every single time. There's nothing you can do about it. I'm not here to make your life a little bit easier. I'm here to punish you and enslave you. I'm a police officer and your politician, and you trust me with your life, and that allows me to destroy it. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. John Key has left the building. There's some form of scumbaggery afoot in virtually every part of the political scale. Anybody who denies it is simply blind, deaf, and quite probably dumb. If you can't see it, then you're not freaking looking. You know, you got people who are in the political parties who can't see it. The people who are at the heads of meetings and things are like that, who can't see it, who are good, decent people, who actually think that these lying filth are telling the truth. Just so blind. That so much of us are like that. We blindly follow anybody. Anybody who talks about what we want to talk about. Anybody, I mean, we're basically like proto-sycophants, the lot of us. All wanting to hear what we all want to hear. And this is something that Jordan Maxwell says as well. People will always choose the lie over the truth. Always. They don't like the truth in general. Maybe it's because lies are so much more comfortable. Kind of like being able to control your dreams. That's what lies are like. Because you can't package or change the truth. A lie, on the other hand, can be a lot more believable because you can change any details you want. And you can repeat it over and over again. And you can get angry with people and stand over them if they question you. And then you can send them into, I don't know, some sort of psychiatric ward and dope you up with Thorazine for 6 months for saying that 9/11 was an inside job because a couple of 100,000 tons of steel and concrete can't collapse in on themselves into particleized dust. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio, 218-339-8525. We'll be right back.
On December 16th, 1961, the world turned upside down, then inside out, and I was born screaming in America. It was the tail end of the American dream, just before we lost our innocence irrevocably, when the TV eye brought the horror of our lives into our homes for all to see. I was told when I grew up I could be anything I wanted. A fireman, a policeman, a doctor, even president, it seems. And for the first time in the history of mankind, something new called an astronaut. But like many kids growing up on a steady diet of Westerns, I always wanted to be the cowboy hero. That lone voice in the wilderness, fighting corruption and evil wherever I found it, and standing for freedom, truth, and justice. And in my heart of hearts, I still track the remnants of that dream wherever I go in my never-ending ride into the setting sun.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on AmericanFreedomRadio.com, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island-chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific, where being free and having freedom of speech is verboten! Verboten! Because it's like Swaziland, but it's more like Nazi land down here, as my good guest right now would put it. His name is Paul Heinrich, is it?
Yep.
Welcome to the show, man.
Welcome.
Tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
I'm IT specialist. I'm also activist. I care about freedom. I care about justice. I care about principles. And I arrived in New Zealand in 2006 with my elder son, with pregnant wife, believing in a propaganda about what I know now as Aotearoa. But I was completely, there was a complete lie about the country, which I get from internet, and that's why I decided to take my family to be in New Zealand and so that my son can be born. Because you have to know that my first son was born in America, because I love America and I love the dream, which unfortunately is turning to nightmare. And my wife chose New Zealand to give birth to our second son, and it turned that it become our nightmare as well. So I do care about those principles and values, because it affects the lack of those principles and values in a general terms in New Zealand and America affected my financial, personal, and emotional situation. Our family was viciously and violently destroyed, my marriage broken. I haven't seen my sons for 4 years now. I have all evidence to establish that New Zealand police and many representatives of the authorities are having connections with the criminal elements, with people involved in immigration trafficking, in smuggling cocaine.
Hold on. What exactly is the difference between the authorities and the criminal element?
That's a good point. That's a very good point. There is actually very little difference. The difference is only that those who are dealing in a crime on the streets are more honest and transparent than those politicians in white collars, as we call them, because they pretend to be honest and straightforward members of the public, and the criminals are not pretending that they are honest and straight. So you made the point that the politicians and authorities are more dangerous than criminals themselves.
Well, look at it this way. A criminal who snatches a handbag, how much damage has he done? Well, he snatched a lady's handbag. A criminal that has the ability to snatch a couple of $100 million out of your economy, how much damage does he do? Freaking hell of a lot more!
Precisely. The one guy in the white collar can destroy the significant part of the society, significant part of the human achievements. And as you said, the one individual who is snatching the handbag or stealing a bike or a car, it's a terrible act, but it, quite often act which is consequence of the political negligence. So yeah.
The punishment needs to be kind of fit the crime sort of thing. And you see these people who are like Lombard Finance or whatever it was. Yep. They get arrested, they go on trial, and they get freaking home detention. And there's something like 30,000 people who put their entire nest eggs into these companies and lost everything. And these guys get to stay at home in their mansions.
Exactly. And there is a good example about the judge, which I'm very concerned about, which I have reasonable grounds to believe that he's a very, very corrupt member of judiciary. His name is Christopher J. Field of the Auckland District Court. He was involved in my affairs and case. And I can say that from my personal experience, but also we have beautiful example of his corrupt character when he was involved in sentencing of one of those blue chip managers and thieves. And he gave him $33,000 fine, where people lost their livelihood, where people lost their entire savings, you know, and there were huge outrage about it. And he frankly don't give a damn. It was a deal made, and that's it. And the guy didn't even end up for one day in prison.
It is that kind of, well, let's put it this way. If I had a nickel for every single time where the people whose opinion matters is completely eclipsed by the people who are just basically paid to lie, I'd be richer than a Rockefeller.
I'm sure you will. I'm sure. I don't think you would choose this kind of life, you know.
But then again, I could gamble on it. Like for example, did you know that you can gamble on the weather on the stock market now? Like you can actually place bets about whether or not there's going to be a drought or a flood or stuff like that on the New York Stock Exchange. So I was wondering if you could like bet on the amount of corruption in a government or something. I reckon that'd be classic. We could corner the market.
But that's the funny thing, because officially New Zealand is one of the least corrupt countries on the planet, which we, I think, both can agree that it's complete propaganda and complete lie. You know, apparently, I don't know where they get this from.
Apparently that's because Transparency International sends out a questionnaire form, like a box-ticking sheet kind of thing, to the governments of the world. And what New Zealand does is they take it out, they sign it, and send it back incomplete. So because there's nothing on there, we're the least corrupt.
Maybe.
I mean, maybe that's when we really try.
You see, but I have to tell you something, that we have kind of different corruption in New Zealand, you know, because everybody knows that there is a certain and significant amount of corruption in Russia, in Poland, in, you know, in all those Eastern Bloc countries or South America. But the corruption over there is well known to everyone. Everyone knows how it operates. There is nothing, you know. It's actually fair to say that it's transparent style of corruption. And from the other hand, in New Zealand, you can't see the corruption with the naked eye. However, However, if you are dealing with any kind of authority, public authority, and you are involved in some kind of personal issue, problem with authority or with another individual who quite often is more connected than you are, then you can see corruption with not only with naked eye, but with the stick on your back, you know. Basically, in New Zealand, you have, like, someone described it as a mafia of colleagues. People call each other, and basically, if someone make a right call to someone else and said, look, I have a problem with this guy, would you please sort him out? I'm going to pay you back next time. And that's how the things are really run in New Zealand quite often. So,
yeah. I mean, I went to New Zealand high schools, and I can tell you, I mean, even at a young age, New Zealanders are starting to become big backstabbers and hide the fact that they're such cretins.
So you have experience from the first hand. But the most dangerous thing about it is that New Zealand is such a beautiful country. There are plenty of honest and good people over there. And you see, the most horrific thing is that they have no idea in what kind of corrupt environment they are truly living. And that's, for me, personally, it's most concerning, because, as I said, in countries like Bulgaria, like Bulgaria, like Russia, everyone knows what's going on. And people live their lives normally. In New Zealand, people don't really know what's going on. You know, someone is destroying a river just next door, you know, just to make a few hundred thousand dollars or a few mils. And it was all, you know, blessed by the government. And no one seems to care, because people believe that the government is not corrupt, that the police is not corrupt in New Zealand. And average Kiwi said, oh, no, it's not in New Zealand. But that's complete rubbish. That's complete delusion.
Exactly. You know, I mean, it's a different kind of corruption here. Like, for example, if you're in Jakarta or something like that, and a cop pulls you up and you've got a bit of weed on you, you can slip him a bit of money, and it's that corrupt that he'll take the money and let you be on your way. Whereas in New Zealand, you try and bribe a cop, you're going down, son, and that kind of thing. But if you get your kid kidnapped by child services for absolutely no reason, on the other hand, and the cop that you go to will actually instead help the people to keep your kid away from you rather than give it back, kind of thing. That's how the corruption works. It's a system built on systems rather than one individual who's taking a bit of money from another individual. It's a circle of being on the take. And that's how they protect themselves as well, because it's kind of like they've circled the wagons at the same time to protect themselves as well as encircle all of us, so that when we want to go get help from somebody else in officialdom, because another branch of officialdom is cracking down on us, we have no idea that all the different people in positions of responsibility who are supposed to be able to help us if we see some corruption or malpractice in another part are on the take as well.
Exactly. Exactly. I couldn't put it better way. Exactly. So that's systematic corruption, which is more dangerous than individuals who take the bunch of cash and just move on. But people don't understand that it's more dangerous than systematic corruption, as you described, is more dangerous and undetectable. You know, you can detect that when it's touching personally you and your life and your family, but you cannot experience this kind of corruption in general terms. Maybe that's why New Zealand is perceived wrongly as a country where there's no transparent corruption.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you find that out differently when you come in through immigration. Almost everybody who I've talked to who's come through New Zealand immigration, they say, well, man, they asked for a little bit of money first off, and then I had to go through all this rigmarole and medical tests, and then they asked me for even more money. And I was like, oh, mate, that's a lot of money, but I've already paid all that other money, so I've got to pay this money too. And then after you've gone through the rigmarole of all of that and busted your hump in order to earn that amount of money, they ask you for a whole heap more, and you're like, oh, well, I've already invested all this whole huge contracts of cash. What other choice do I have? It's like It's like almost being sold into sex slavery or something like that, but authorized and humanitarian-like by the government.
Yep. Actually, I call it modern slavery, because back days, the British were taking, you know, they were basically kidnapping people from Africa and elsewhere for their plantations and you know, for slavery, for slave work. However, today, it's even worse, because those poor people from Africa and from Asia and from many other countries, they have to save the money to get a ticket and become a slave in the country of destination, like Great Britain or America or New Zealand or Australia. And they didn't even realize that they are slaves, that they are working for the minimum wage for the rest of their lives, you know. And so it's modern slavery.
It's modern slavery. Have you noticed how you talk to some of your mates or whatever, and they're like, you know, I'm not liking it in here in New Zealand, or I'm not liking it here in the United States. I think I might go to New Zealand, or I think I might go to the United States. You know, like they're all both going its way to escape the tyranny that's in their own backyard kind of thing. Like, I wonder which tyranny suits me best. Maybe the Taiwanese tyranny will suit me for a bit. You know, I like it in Taiwan. Whatever. Maybe I like a little bit of New Zealand corruption, you know, that good old-fashioned small-town boss hog type corruption, old-fashioned-like. And we don't think for a second whether or not tyranny itself and living under it is good for us. We just think which tyranny best suits me. Fucking stupid man. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. The number is 218-339-8525. Back in a few minutes.
Eastwood Show. That's John Banks' theme song. He listens to it while he counts his cocaine money.
Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, ladies and gentlemen, on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. The most respectful and non-libel slandering 2 hours of talk radio. And the most honest too. My very special guest is Paul Heinrich. And you wanted to talk about some of your personal experiences, Paul.
Yes. So coming back to my name, my original birth name is Heinrich, because I'm German descent. However, when I was living in New Zealand since 2006, I was telling you how we arrived with my family. I arrived on my original Polish passport, because I'm also a Polish citizen. And I was having the name Mishuk, because it's dangerous in Poland to live with German name. So when I get married, I adopt my wife's name, which is Mishuk. So you can find my cases in High Court, in Supreme Court, Court of Appeal, and elsewhere, all over the internet, under Pavel Marian Mishuk, M-I-S-I-U-K, against Crown and so on. And what I can tell you is that I arrived to New Zealand with, as I said, with children, with wife. I invest in New Zealand about 250,000 New Zealand dollars cash, all legitimate money. It was my life savings. I sold a company and cars back in Europe to settle in New Zealand. And everything was taken by a bunch of criminals supported by corrupt New Zealand authorities, including family court judge David G. Mather, who accept bribe, and I can prove it. I know it's very serious allegation, but I can prove it. He accept bribe via proxy, via a Polish mafia resident, Mr. Suder, S-U-D-E-R, who is allegedly businessman, and he lived in a million-dollar mansion. And the funny thing about him is that his million-dollar mansion must have came from somewhere, because ever since he was in New Zealand, he lived on benefit, invalid benefit. So officially, he's unable to work. However, he's a millionaire, and he arrived to New Zealand with one bag of dirty, smelly stuff about 25 years ago. So Mr. Studer bribed family court judge Mehta in order to obtain protection order against me, and using this protection order obtained ex parte without hearing, they basically destroyed my life. They put me in prison, they charged me with completely ridiculous allegations like sending a bunch of 30 roses to my wife. They charged me with breach of the protection order by some kind of psychological abuse by sending flowers to my legal wife. I got 4 months imprisonment from another corrupt judge Field in Auckland District Court for sending 30 roses without even written tickets to my wife. So there was no issue of potential threat. Basically, it was just 30 beautiful, long New Zealand roses. So my mother, who visited New Zealand, being invited by my ex-wife, was kidnapped by Mr. Suder, and police take 3 statements, separate statements from the witnesses that the woman was taken. 111 call was recorded, which is suppressed. No disclosure was ever given to me or lawyers, and police basically corruptly cover up kidnapping case in order to keep Polish mafia member safe and sound without any responsibility. My mother till today is suffering trauma after what happened to her, and she couldn't understand how possibly a woman can be kidnapped in front of the witnesses, police can be called, and nothing, completely nothing happened. Judge Field personally at my trial suppressed evidence about kidnapping. Judge Field personally deprived me from the jury, benefit of the jury, and he himself, refusing my case to be heard before the jury, he himself imposed make order to be a trial judge. So he also deprived me from cross-examination of the only crown witness in respect of my ridiculous charges, which is my wife. My wife was given offer by the police and New Zealand Immigration that if she will give perjury evidence at my trial, she will be supported in stay in New Zealand. So, honest and decent family woman having no other choice, dealing with vicious and corrupt individuals and authorities, she decides to give evidence against me. And having no jury, having no cross-examination, Judge Field personally disallowed me to ask a single question at my trial. I was having no lawyer because Judge Field told me that he's not going to engage a lawyer for me. So I was having no lawyer, no jury, no opportunity to cross-examine the major witness of the Crown. And that's how they sort me out. But it still wasn't easy because my trial took place between, you won't believe that, my friend. I would like to apply for the Guinness record. I appear in court over 300 times. And I can swear on the Bible that that's the fact. In the same proceedings, in one case pending since 2006, December 24th, when I was first time arrested, till my leaving New Zealand on May 25th this year, I appeared before New Zealand courts over 300 times. Every single bloody judge knows me. And 90% of judges who are not idiots, who are not crazy enough to put their signatures on perjury and such a miscarriage of justice and travesty of justice, they were simply abandoning my case, leaving for someone to deal with it. And of course, corrupt idiot Judge Field took the case and he sorted me out. So I told you that it's very personal because I lost livelihood, I lost my house on 42 Albion Vale Road, Glen Eden, beautiful family house. I lost 3 cars, which I never sell. I have documents that I paid for those cars. I'm the rightful owner. And Judge Field gave one of my cars. I can say gave because the guy gave perjury evidence, which I was able to prove it. And he admitted in open court that he is in the possession of my car. He basically admitted that he stole my car. And when I request the judge to force the police to arrest him and charge him with theft, the judge told me directly that this is not his business. And he's here to deal with me, not with him. So basically, the judge field gave him stolen car. So he basically engaged himself in criminal activity as well, from my perspective.
I hear this all too often from people, and it's like the New Zealand judiciary is really small. This is how it works. For those of you who aren't aware, there's only a small amount of high court justices, judges, and things of that nature. And you notice how there's a lot of sons and fathers who are lawyers or family law practices, things of that nature. So that's even smaller again. So not only do you have an awful lot of judges that are all from a small clique and go to the same law schools and stuff like that, but a lot of them are related. For example, I think how many high court justices or something are there in this country? Not that many, but
I think I can give you precise list because I have a book with me with the precise list of the high court judges, and it would be not more than maybe 70.
Yeah, I think it was like 70 or 80 high court justices, out of that, about 40 or 50 of them are related, like cousins at least.
Yep, I won't be surprised.
And in the High Court, not the High Court, the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court's got 8 justices in it, 8 judges, and 2 of them are husband and wife.
Actually, my friend, the Supreme Court has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 justices.
Ah, yep.
6 of them.
Two of them are husband and wife. It's even worse.
It's even worse. The Chief Justice Elias, she's a high-profile Illuminati. She's a Freemason, a very dangerous personality. And
you realize women can't be Freemasons, though, right?
She is.
Freemasons are a male-only organization. There's other Freemasonic offshoots for women that they can go to. I think what was it,
yes. Of course, I mean she's not in a male sense, but she's a Freemason in a female sense, which is one of the strongest organizations in New Zealand. You have to know.
Yeah.
For females, that's exceptional place for females to become. High-profile members of Masonic societies. Yes, and we have to strike out one justice from the Supreme Court, which is Justice Wilson, who amazingly was kicked out from the judiciary, but he didn't forget to take more than $1 million payout.
You know what? I think it's really about time that these people get chucked out of a plane without a golden parachute. Paul, thanks very much for coming on the show today. And do you have a website or anything like that you can plug?
I'm working on it. It's a huge task because I have between 45,000 to 50,000 pages of documentation.
Well, you better get busy. You better get freaking busy. All right. Thanks for coming on the show, man. And let's hope that you get some of that documentation up. And other than that, if this is your first time on radio, Paul, you've at least now going to have a presence on YouTube and the internet. So there you go. There's a start. And I'm sure 50,000 documents will follow. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Join us in the chat room if you want to be part of the Skype chat after the show. See ya.